Well, hello there.
We're on chapter 25. If you've been here with us before, you know that this is Epiphany. It's a novel in progress, as a matter of fact, by B.D. Harrell. I will confess, it's going to take a little bit of work on my part. I am working on chapter 27 right at the moment. I do have chapter 28 in the can, so to speak. I also have some conclusion. Right now, we're continuing the narrative on chapter 25. If you remember, on chapter 23, or at the end of chapter 23, we had Dan and Beasley hiking down from the mountain and hearing voices coming in their direction. And one of them, well, the voices had a shotgun. They're aiming straight at them. Chapter 25. "Get up, Beasley," one of Sheriff's deputies demanded. "You too, Reverend." Dan and Beasley slowly got up, taking care to keep their hands visible to avoid an accidental discharge of buckshot from one of the overanxious deputies. "You're both under arrest," the other deputy informed them. "Should we cuff them?" the second deputy asked his partner. "Garrett, it'll just make it that much more difficult to bring us down to the trailhead in one piece," Beasley replied. "Skip the cuffs and just read us our Miranda rights. And if it isn't too much trouble, you have something to eat or drink? We lost ours when we were hightailing it away from Sheriff Pinkerman and his buddy last night." The second deputy, Garrett, seemed embarrassed when Beasley addressed him. "Who was that anyway?" she continued. "Tell me, Poole, did he hire him a new guy? I can't say that I've seen him before." "What other guy?" the first deputy Poole asked. "He staked out the campground all by himself last night. There is no one with him that I know of." "He was the guy in the picture," Dan volunteered. "I'd seen him several times before last night." "Well, Sheriff Pinkerman always works alone. Always had and always will. Beasley'll tell you that. Isn't that right, Beasley?" "He wasn't alone last night, Poole," she shot back. "I saw the guy, too." While the exchange was going on, Garrett put down his backpack and produced a couple of bottles of water. He gave them to his captives. They eagerly accepted his gifts. Trail mix was produced too. Within 5 minutes, they continued their trip down toward the trailhead, with Garrett and Poole following closely behind. "To answer your earlier question, Dan, we should make the nearest trailhead in about an hour and a half," Beasley stated. "You best shut up," Poole growled. Beasley came to a dead stop and wheeled around to confront the deputy. "You best mind your own business, Poole," she shot back. "That goes for you too, Garrett." And the moment Poole's attention was turned to his fellow deputy, Beasley managed to grab Poole's shotgun and fired it off into the air. On the shot, Garrett dropped his shotgun and backed off. "Now that I have your attention, gentlemen, I need your radios and your tracking devices," Beasley announced. Both deputies handed their electronic devices to Dan while Beasley covered them with their own shotguns. She then had Dan tie the deputies together, chained to a tree. When they were settled, Beasley calmly picked up one of the radios to tell the sheriff where to pick up his deputies. "By the way," she added, "that man that you had with you last night is a person of interest to the agency. You'd best see that our people have a talk to vet him before we return to the trailhead." She then turned off the radio and placed it and the tracking devices just out of reach of the deputies. Taking care to leave enough water to leave them hydrated, she and Dan continued the trek toward the trailhead. "Would you want to go the other way?" Dan asked. "Why?" Beasley smiled. "It's going to take the sheriff 45 minutes to an hour to figure out which of his deputies are missing and to organize a posse to rescue them. They have half a dozen trailheads to cover with no idea which one will come out. If they figure out which trailhead Rosencrantz and Guildenstern took to get to the wilderness, wouldn't they cover that trailhead first?" Dan wondered. "Ooh, nice Shakespearean reference, Dan," she chuckled. "My rationale is the same as you had at one time. If you go where they expect you to be, they'll try to outsmart you by going where they think you'll be going." "Out on the roadway by the drive-in campground where we started in the first place. But how did you know?" "I had a talk with a friend of yours, Harold Richmond." Dan let out a hearty chuckle while Beasley continued. "He told me about that little cat and mouse game you had when you were in high school. He told me a bit about you too, about your family. I envy Emily." Harold told you about me? Dan was shocked. What else do you know? For one thing, you tend to doubt yourself, Beasley pointed out. Or maybe you doubt your abilities. And Harold Richmond told you that. No, Harold never said a word. It's just an observation. You envy Emily. Yes, she admitted. After four kids, you still put her on a pedestal as if she's the most beautiful woman in the world. But at the same time, you respect her for what she's accomplished aside from raising your children. Well, how do you know that? Dan asked. I told you. Observation. Well, that and the talk I had with Emily before suggesting this outing. Beasley stopped in her tracks and listened for a few moments before continuing. From the moment I met you, you were an enigma. There was something special about you which I needed to touch. I needed to know more about than just the superficial things, so when the opportunity presented itself, I made a few phone calls to find out as much as I could about you in a very short amount of time. In just a couple of hours, including a trip to the Outfitters, Dan was amazed at the timeline from his point of view. You were taking one hell of a risk, weren't you? He continued. I mean, I could have been the errant priest looking for a young, innocent victim, you know. I know, but I know you weren't, she pointed out. You're leaving me alone when I was doing my yoga yesterday morning proved it. Both travelers let Beasley's words soak in while they continued down the trail. Do you feel any closer to your interpretation of God? Beasley's inquiry about an hour after leaving the deputy startled Dan. He was asking himself the same question. She merely vocalized what he thought. I believe so, yes, he answered. I just wish that Emily was here to share what I'm feeling. Well, maybe you can bring her up here once we've concluded our business, Beasley suggested. I don't know if she has the stamina to hike out in one of these campsites. Besides, I don't know how she'll handle not having running water. Well, she said the same thing about you, and Beasley cut herself short. She listened for a few moments and ushered Dan off the path to a place where they could hide. For a second time that day, there were voices coming up the trail. When they were about 30 yards away, Beasley relaxed a little. When the pair came into view, Beasley whistled and came out of hiding. Well, it took you long enough to get here, she scolded the pair. The sheriff and a couple of his deputies were at the trailhead. Dan saw that the woman talking was Agent Walker from the campsite on top of the sods. She was in company of Agent Platt. Your buddy Collier was one of the deputies at the trailhead, Agent Platt informed the Beasley. He was asking all sorts of questions, especially about you, rather Walker here. He was convinced that she was you, and he wasn't satisfied until he ran a set of fingerprints in what he called his mobile crime lab. Do you know if they're behind you? Dan asked, fearing for his safety. Actually, they're not, Walker assured him. Another posse found the posse you tied up there, and they were headed to intercept you at the north trailhead. Garrett and Poole sent them off in the wrong direction, Beasley exclaimed. Say, I told you they weren't really such bad guys. Dan shook his head. After laughing off the circumstance, the four of them continued to the trailhead, where they were met by James Hamner and three other agents. Soon they were on their way to a resort in the valley where the FBI had rented a block of rooms as a command post. You say you met your mystery man with the sheriff last night. James started debriefing with that simple statement. I didn't. We didn't meet him as much as we saw the man, corrected the agent, or Dan corrected the agent. It was dark. We were hiding, but we, or at least I saw, it was definitely him. It was him, all right, Beasley confirmed. Man, that was spooky. I nailed every detail. We were able to get a positive ID on our person of interest, one of the agents with Hamner chimed in. He's ex-Army, served in both Afghanistan and Iraq. His name is Charles Peter Clark. Not much is known about him other than he seems to be a child of a single mother who lives in your neck of the woods, Pastor. Our question is, why did he show up here at the same time you showed up, Hamner asked. I'd be asking why he was with the sheriff last night trying to track down Pastor Stevens, Beasley stated. From the looks of it, Sheriff Pinkerman may have a personal interest in this case. And that's where we're leaving Chapter 25 on this, the 1st of December, 2016. I'll be writing on Chapter 27, join that up with Chapter 28, and We should be coming up to a conclusion on this before too much longer, although I'm not going to say when quite yet. We've just come off something called the deal where you're supposed to write 50,000 words in a month. It's a November. Where you're supposed to write a novel of 50,000 words. I came up short. The quote or the word count here on what I have written down with Epiphany is 45,072. That's due to go down, I'm sure, or actually it's due to go up. I've got more in the can. Other than that, hope you're having a great holiday season. Got people to do and things to see. Yes, yes. And we will be seeing you.